music and talk radio about all things, all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous here on CJSF 90.1 FM, campus and community radio from Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast on the unceded ancestral territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. I am Robin, and I am your virtual host today. I am recording this program from the comfort of my own home on Zoom because I have an interview with someone on Zoom coming up to play for you. My guest later on in the show is Helena Sifferling, the executive director of Living in Community, and I'll be talking to her about an upcoming conference that is for and about sex work and advocacy. So stay tuned for that. Before we hear that interview and get to it, I want to start with a song, as we usually do here on Intravenous. We're going to hear a track from Alison Goldfrapp. This is Fever here on Intravenous.
Together we dance along.
right. As I mentioned in the introduction to the show, I'm joined on a Zoom pre-recording here for today's show. I've got Helena Sifferling, who is the current executive director of Living in Community and the spokesperson for their upcoming conference, Moving from Response to Resilience, Collaborating for a Better BC for Sex Workers, to talk about living in community, but also the conference that is coming up. So happy to have you join me, Helena. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me on today.
I want to get started by just, you know, a 101 kind of on what living in community is and what it does.
Yeah, absolutely. So Living in Community, we are a nonprofit organization and we're also a charity as well. We are based in Vancouver, but we work across the province of BC and actually beyond the colonial borders as well. And basically what we do is education and advocacy around the needs and the rights of sex workers. So we don't provide any frontline services, but what we do is really work with those frontline services, with sex workers directly, kind of through those organizations. And we kind of bring everybody together to say, okay, what's going on in your communities? What are the needs that you're seeing there? What are the service gaps? What are the government policies that need to change? What are the laws that need to change? And then based on bringing everybody together, hearing from everybody, what they are needing, what they're experiencing, we kind of then combine all of that knowledge together. And then we go do advocacy and education work with what we're hearing from everybody. We hear especially from frontline organizations in maybe more rural or remote communities that they, you know, often maybe don't have the staffing or the funding to like participate in all these government consultations or learn about the legislation or the bylaws or kind of understand all the bureaucracy that can go on with these things. But what's really helpful for them is if they have somebody, which is us, who can do that for them. So yeah, we don't provide frontline services ourselves, but basically we combine all of that knowledge together and then we go fill that role saying, all right, this is what we're hearing from sex workers and from people working on the front lines with sex workers. And therefore, these are the things that we recommend that you change. So we speak to governments and maybe other organizations, others who have power to change things and kind of share with them what we're hearing from sex workers.
That's really great. To be the intermediary between, you know, the frontline workers and the governments providing advocacy. What can you tell us about where the inspiration or influence came from to start Living in Community? And have there been like particular milestones or, I don't know, you know, those successes and challenges that organizations go through from inception to where you are now that are kind of remarkable?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. There have been a lot of changes along the way. There has been a long history, so I can give you a little bit of that for sure. So Living in Community got started in the early 2000s, about 2003, 2004. And we got started really just in the city of Vancouver. And more focused, especially around the downtown east side of Vancouver as well. So folks may remember, and this will be a little bit of a trigger warning just to let folks know. Folks may remember around that time, of course, there was a serial killer who targeted a lot of marginalized women, including folks who were sex workers. And that, and, you know, some other things as well, meant that there was not a lot of trust, particularly between sex workers and police. And there also, you know, were maybe business owners or nonprofits or others in the community that would see, especially street-based sex work. So folks who might work out on the street and think, you know, I don't want these people coming in my neighborhood or I don't want them around here, for various reasons. So just to kind of really quickly, I guess, summarize the situation at that time, there was a lot of distrust. There were a lot of people, in these communities in Vancouver kind of feeling like, what's happening is not working and we need a different solution. And the idea for Living in Community really came out of just kind of seeing if people could get together in a room and have a conversation and start to build relationships or not, or, you know, find out that there was not able, it was not able to have trust be built. It was just an experiment. And so initially, the way that Living in Community started, there were sex workers, there were frontline organizations, there were business organizations. The Vancouver Police Department was initially at the table. The city of Vancouver was at the table. So it was really, as I said, kind of an experiment to see if people could come together and talk and find common ground. And really what was, you know, one of the main things that folks found was, you know, nobody wants any workers to be unsafe. Nobody wants people to feel like their neighborhood is unsafe, including the sex workers who live in the neighborhood, right? And so, you know, the solution of criminalization was not working. The solution of sweeping people and moving them to another neighborhood was not working. So we needed something else. And so basically through some of those early conversations and early meetings, folks just kind of wanted to continue meeting, continue talking, continue trying to find solutions together. And so, yeah, some of those early milestones, there was an action plan in 2007 that got developed that had a number of recommendations, mostly focused on the city of Vancouver and then some provincial pieces as well. And then, you know, got some more funding, got some more support to continue. And then in 2014, I believe, they put out an update to the action plan to kind of say, all right, we have this new kind of model. We're bringing these folks together to talk, whereas maybe before they didn't talk that much. Here's what we've done so far. Here's what else we want to do now. And then maybe it's important to note as well, especially in the 2010s, the city of Vancouver really did a lot to move forward in quite a progressive way with their approach to sex work policy. So maybe I'll just briefly interject about the laws. So hopefully this makes sense. And I won't get too heavy with it. I'm not a lawyer, so I won't claim to know everything in depth, but just very briefly, the laws in Canada that have to do with sex work are federal. That's really all I'm going to say about that. But with that said, there are things that other levels of government can do to make sex workers safer and uphold their rights better, even though the laws are federal. So with that in mind, at the city of Vancouver, they really did a lot, especially in the 2010s, to kind of see what they could do as a city. So they held a task force that a number of my coworkers and folks who were involved with Living in Community at the time, they were on that task force, as well as other members of the community, of course. They then went on to hire two sex work social planners. So they have social planning staff specifically focused on sex worker safety. They did other things too, but the point of it being they kind of took an approach where they were like, okay, we need to learn more about what's going on in the community, what sex workers who live here, who are our neighbors and our constituents, what they need to feel safe. We need to, you know, provide more funding maybe to frontline organizations that are based here in the city that are providing these services. We need to maybe look into training for bylaw officers for them to understand what's going on. Maybe look into training for people, staff working in policy, in social policy, in planning. Make sure maybe that when we're doing public consultations about a specific neighborhood, we're thinking about the sex workers that might live and work in the neighborhood and including them in the consultations too. So yeah, the city of Vancouver around that time was really moving quite a bit as well in terms of, being a bit more inclusive with including sex workers in their planning. Again, even though the laws were federal. And so with that in mind, I think because the city had been shifting a bit around that time, and also because Living in Community had kind of naturally over time been growing a little bit as people saw that this model was working, we began to shift to do more provincial level work rather than just work focused on the city of Vancouver. Not to say our work was done in the city of Vancouver, of course, there's always more to be done, but, you know, it just sort of naturally was happening that we were like, maybe the need is shifting a little bit more to be more broad across the province. Maybe the next milestone I'll talk about then in 2019, jumping ahead a little bit, Living in a Community held our first provincial conference. And this was really the first time, that there was a provincial conference in BC that was focused on the needs and the rights of sex workers. There had been other, you know, smaller, maybe more regional events, but not a provincial level conference of this scale. And I should say this was all before my time with Living in Community. So everything I'm sharing now is the work of my predecessors and the folks that came before me that, you know, laid so much of this groundwork. But what I understand is that that conference of 2019 was really the first time that a lot of folks, especially from outside of the Lower Mainland or maybe the Victoria area, got to kind of come together and meet in person and share, oh, you're dealing with that in your community? I am too, and I didn't know how to deal with it. Or, you know, we're trying to open this new outreach program or this new drop-in center, and we have no idea how to do it. Oh, I've met this person, and they are doing that in a small community too, or they're doing that with limited resources too, and so I can learn from them, and I can figure out how to do it where I am. So it was really, really, I think, just amazing. I'm trying to think of a more tangible adjective, but truly, it just seems like that was a really big moment in our history, in terms of people, yeah, being able to meet and build those relationships and learn from each other. And so really since 2019, I'm giving kind of a long history, but hopefully it's interesting. Really since 2019, we've definitely shifted to be working more provincial in scope. So coming out of that 2019 conference, we started to convene this network of provincial stakeholders that, again, are mainly frontline organizations in communities all across BC. There's one up in the Yukon as well, so it's broader than the borders here. We started to do a lot more work to kind of bring these folks together, help them learn from each other, and do more advocacy, more focused on the provincial level as well. So, yeah, those were the main markers maybe so far. And then maybe last one I'll add in there is that up until 2020 as well, we were kind of just a small project, you know, off the side of some people's desks, trying to, I guess, as I said, sort of just see what people needed over time and respond to those changing needs over time. But in 2020, we finally incorporated as a nonprofit. And then just earlier this year in spring 2023, we got our charitable status. So that was also a pretty big moment, I guess, in terms of really clarifying, oh no, this seems to be this convening model of really bringing people together, broadly from different sectors for folks to come together and learn together. This model is working. This model seems to be a thing people like and want and see value in. And so, you know what, we're going to set up as our own organization. We're going to become a charity. So that was a pretty big moment as well. Yeah, and that brings us now to holding a conference.
Yeah. Congratulations with all of that. And it, you know, it strikes me how, you know, with the way that the conversation has shifted and changes, that it kind of opens up and allows for you to incorporate and, you know, really shine in the model of convening people who are interested in talking about it and moving the issues forward. So that's really exciting. You know, we're talking about sex work and sex workers, and I think that when people hear those terms, it comes with a lot of understanding or misunderstanding, depending on, you know, how we think about it. How do you define sex work, and what exactly are we talking about, and who are we talking about?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I'll speak about that a little bit. And I'll also say, and this is not a marketing ploy, but we do education, and we actually do have a new online education component as well. So if folks are listening and you want to learn more, go to our website and you can learn more about our courses. I don't say that just to try to sell training, but more so to name that there are a lot, I think, of misconceptions about sex work or misunderstandings about it, or people just feel like, oh gosh, I don't know about that, but it's kind of stigmatized. I don't really know. So one of our courses in particular really focuses on just kind of breaking down the stigma about sex work and understanding what it is, really from a non-judgmental perspective. So for example, I'll just give you a tiny little teaser. So one of the exercises in that course just asks people to reflect on, you know, what did you learn growing up about sex? You know, did you learn that it was meant to only look a certain way, only be between certain types of people? You know, it gets into some of that. It asks people to reflect on what they learned about work. You know, is work something that you do because you're passionate about it and you love it every day, you love it, Or is it something you do to get a paycheck, to pay your rent? Anyway, and then it gets into thinking about what are your thoughts about sex work? What were you taught about this? What did you learn about it? What have you seen in the media about it? So all that to say, we do break this a lot. We break this down in a lot more depth. So feel free to check out our website for more resources. But with that said, the basic definition that we use around sex work is saying that sex work is the exchange of money or other goods for sexual services provided by a consenting adult. So we really only, talk about or focus on adults that are consenting to doing this, of course. Sex work can include lots of different things. I spoke a little bit earlier about street-based sex work. So that's folks that you might see standing out on the street. Of course, there's lots of other places that sex work can happen. It can be online, it can be indoors. There can be obviously folks that do maybe exotic dancing, pornography, cam work, lots of different kinds of things. The umbrella is quite large, basically any type of sexual service or sexual adjacent service provided by consenting adults. And maybe I'll just name two, because this is another common maybe trope that we see in the media. We see maybe like the pretty woman type of stereotype. So I do think it's important to name that, though, you know, statistics are a bit hard to come by and not always only the thing to rely on, but though the majority of sex workers probably identify as or present as women, there, of course, are sex workers who are men, who are transgender, who are queer, who are gender diverse. There's folks from all kind of orientations and experiences who do sex work. So someone you know might be a sex worker, even if you don't think they, quote, look like it or act like it. Sex work is really, really diverse.
I think age also fits mm-hmm. into that category. There's no sort of limit to, and of course we're talking about consenting adults, but, you know, from the age of moral majority all the way up, also fits mm-hmm. categorically in there, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Very good point.
What can you say about the ways that opening up and changing the conversation about sex work and sex workers matters? Like, why should we be talking about it?
Well, yeah, I think for several reasons. Of course, I'm biased because I'm here with Living in Community doing this work every day. So that's the bias that I hold. However, I think that the issue, I guess, to follow that of sex work is not, you know, just a niche sort of issue happening. I think to me, this is really at the overlap, I guess, at the intersection of a lot of really key movements that folks are fighting for. So for example, at the conference that we're holding next week, we have a keynote session that will be about sex work as work and talking about the labor lens of sex work and why, if you are a union or you want to support labor rights, employment standards, people having access to job protections and other rights that workers have fought for a long, long time, you should be supporting sex workers and thinking of what you can do to do that in whatever sector you're in. So we'll be talking about, you know, how because the laws are the way they are in Canada, sex workers can't work together in a group to stay safe. They can't unionize. they are really prevented from having access to a lot of the other rights and protections that other workers have because they fought for them for so long. So there's really a lot of important linkages, I think, for the labor movement. This is also, you know, a human rights issue in terms of, you know, the perspective of if these are consenting adults doing what they want to do in their own homes with their own money, why is this something that we want to regulate? So why are we making laws and policies still based from this kind of moral perspective? Of course, famously, it was former Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau who said, this is not the exact quote, I'm going to get it wrong, but he said something right about how the government doesn't have a place in the bedrooms of the nation. So why are we still making laws against consenting adults engaging in sex work? So there's really important legal questions, there's really important human rights questions, labor questions, health questions. And I think ultimately to, just to come back again to the stigma, I think in our culture, you know, we have a lot of hangups still around sex and around people doing what they want to consensually with their own bodies. So I think, yeah, I'm getting very broad, I know, with what I'm saying right now, but I do truly think that spaces like this for us to talk about sex work, you know, it isn't really important to focus on sex work as a specific sector that we're here to organize on. And at the same time, I think it's important to recognize that this isn't some, as I said, niche thing happening in one place that's not connected to the other movements. This is really part of, as I've said, labor movements, human rights movements, legal movements, et cetera. And yeah, I think that's another hope that we have for the conference next week and for the work we do generally is to really kind of show people, if they don't already know, I know more and more people do, but if anyone doesn't, to kind of show them and make it clear, you know, this is part of your movement too. There might be something you can do if you're a lawyer or a teacher, or you work in government, or you work for a health authority, or, you know, wherever it is that you are, there might be something that you can do. If you're a student, maybe you write a paper on it in your class. Maybe you learn more about it that way. So there's lots of different ways I think that folks can realize and recognize the sex worker rights movement as part of what they are doing for sure.
I'm sure that there are more challenges than not sometimes, just because there is a lot of social stigma and, you know, the narrative that we often hear, and you described some of, you know, what that looks like and what that sounds like. But can you identify some of the bigger challenges to shifting this social narrative that we live with or live under?
Yeah, I can try for sure. They do get really big. I mean, I do think the biggest thing though, which I've touched on a little bit, but the biggest thing for sure is the laws. I said before that I wouldn't get into the details of the laws, but maybe I'll add a little bit more just if folks don't know. And it can be quite confusing and just kind of convoluted too. So basically what the laws are here in Canada is something called asymmetrical decriminalization, or the Nordic model, sometimes called. So basically on paper, this means that to do sex work yourself is not illegal, but anything else around it basically is. So to buy, like to purchase on the purchasing side of sex work, to work together, as they said, in a group, to hire, like if you want to hire like a bodyguard or a driver, somebody to keep you safe, that's not allowed. You can't, as I said, organize, unionize, you can't advertise your services. So of course, while on paper, that's the way that people, I guess, argue for that model or claim that it works is because it's not criminalizing the sex worker themselves,